is the Rob Carson Show. Are you ready to be pod smacked? Now, here's Rob Carson.
Hey guys, welcome to episode number 190 of the podcast. If you are downloading it on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Player FM, Google Plus, Google Play, la la la. That's what the number is. It doesn't mean a whole lot. It means that I've done 190 of these. If you are tuning in this evening on Podcast One Radio Network, hello, Podcast One Radio Network. Glad to have you joining me there. And of course, Liberty One TV. Hi. Hi, Liberty One TV viewers. Glad to have you on here. New time, of course, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 o'clock Central Standard Time. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, and I've got a ton of stuff to get to on the show. I would encourage you, if you would not mind, sign up for Liberty One TV. Will you do that? Okay, it's $10 a month, $99 a year, worth every penny of it. And the glorious thing about it is it's unbridled free speech. A lot of fellow hosts like myself put a lot of work in to bring you, I think, a product that's pretty darn good, and I hope you enjoy it. So thank you. Oh, and by the way, Podcast One Network. Want to remind you that my show was on 6 o'clock Central there, 6 o'clock Eastern and 5 o'clock Central on there. All right. Welcome. Let's talk about stuff today. We've got a number of stories to get to. I'm going to start with this war of words that's going on with the president and him calling a Gold Star widow on Tuesday morning. There was a congresswoman with this woman who lost her husband. He called the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson on Tuesday. Maisha Johnson was on her way to the airport where her husband's remains were arriving. And this is just unbelievably sad for her, of course. And she took the president's call. And Representative Frederica Wilson was sitting next to her when the Trump was on speakerphone. And he made the comment that he knew what he signed up for. But I know that didn't make it easier. The widow was in tears, and she said, according to this congresswoman, he didn't even remember his name. Donald Trump said that the Democrat congressman totally fabricated what I said, and I have the proof. Now, here's the problem that I have. That this congresswoman would do this, that she would sign up for all the talk shows and expose whatever she thought the president said. This woman is a politico. This woman is clearly a Trump hater. She is like Maxine Waters with a bad cowboy hat. She wears these idiotic-looking cowboy hats. Here's the original call to CNN from Frederica Wilson. That she thought that she should publicize a phone call to a grieving widow in a private moment.
Well, basically, he said, I guess he knew what he signed up for. But I guess it still hurts. That's what he said.
The president said to her he knew what he signed up for.
He knew what he was signing up for.
But when it happens, it hurts anyway.
How insensitive is that? Is that insensitive? He was talking to her. He knew what he signed up for, but I know it hurts anyway. He did know what he signed up for. He knew exactly what he signed up for.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He was a member of Special Forces.
So it's almost as if this is a young woman who has two children, who is 6 months pregnant with a third child. She has just lost her husband. She was just told that he cannot have an open casket funeral, which gives her all kinds of nightmares, how his body must look, how his face must look. And this is what the president of the United States says to her?
This is very personal information that this congresswoman decided to spew. Wednesday, she called CNN and said of the president, this gentleman has a brain disorder. He needs to be checked out. We should be praising his family, not insulting them. What the hell does that mean? Why would you say that about the president of the United States? Did anybody say that about Barack Obama? I don't understand this. Here's a little bit more. Frederica Wilson saying about Donald Trump having proof, and she says she does.
Well, I don't know what kind of proof he could be talking about. I'm not the only person that was in the car. And I have proof, too. This man is a sick man. He's cold-hearted, and he feels no pity or sympathy.
What? Why did this come out other than to attack the president like this? To attack the president, call the president a sick man. What kind of a person does this other than somebody who is purely and utterly political?
For anyone. This is a grieving widow who is 6 months pregnant.
Here we go.
This is a young woman. She's only 24 years old. She weighs maybe 110 pounds.
What does this matter? Why does this matter at all?
And she has two other kids, 2 years old and 6 years old. And when she actually hung up the phone, she looked at me and said, he didn't even know his name.
So
that's the
why would this woman, this wretched, awful cow in a cowboy hat, feel it was necessary to contact CNN and then line up on all of these talk shows to say this and then embellish it by saying that the president is mentally ill, other than she is a pure political hack? Here's a little bit more from the cow in the cowboy hat.
Well, I didn't hear the whole phone call, I did hear him say, I'm sure he knew what he was signing up for, and but it still hurts.
So that's how you interpreted it. You interpreted it as the president saying something callous in that way. Obviously, it can be heard lots of different ways.
Well, how do you suppose this woman is going to hear it? How do you suppose this wretched woman is going to hear it if she's willing to go and say that the president is sick and the president has a mental disorder? What sort of prism do you suppose she's going to see hear the president's phone call through?
It could be heard as the president trying to find some point of understanding to speak out to the widow. How did she hear it? What was her response?
She was crying. She broke down. And she said, he didn't even know his name. So
did you hear that part?
Did he know the name or did he just not say the name? He was talking to her. Did he say your husband? Did he need to say his name? Did she say, hello, my Aisha, I'm calling about your husband, Sergeant LaDavid Johnson. No, I'm calling about your husband.
Did you hear the part where they left the impression that he didn't know his name?
She heard the part that he didn't know his name. And I don't think we should be trying to go into all of this.
Okay. So in other words, I don't need to go into that. I mean, I didn't hear it, so I don't need to go into it. She was later heard on CNN saying she doesn't want to politicize it, and she just did. A desperately grieving widow in a car on the way to the airport to see her husband, and this awful woman is divulging her interpretation of a phone call from the president and the details of this man and this woman's family, the fact that he had a closed casket funeral. Why did the world need to know this other than she is embellishing for sympathy? That's what it reminds me of. Here is a Gold Star father, Craig Gross, talking on CNN about how the president's words he thought were being taken out of context.
Is doing a lot of good things as far as Gold Star families is concerned. And my perception of this story is that his words are basically being taken and misconstrued. I believe that if you interviewed him personally, one-on-one, you would find that he's very, very empathetic and very compassionate, not only toward Gold Star families, but also in regards to our active duty. I believe he has a big heart for them as well.
Who would you believe as far as sympathy toward Gold Star families and military members? A man who effectively tied the hands of the military for 8 years, took away the rules of engagement that would allow them to go after the enemy rather than wait until the enemy attacks before you can engage them. Who would you believe? A man who traded a deserter for 5 Taliban 4-star generals? Or would you believe a president who loves the military, the president who untied the hands of the military, who put General Mad Dog Mattis in charge of the military, a president who is now seen in 9 months ISIS being vanquished from Raqqa in Syria, the former capital where they made their haven. Who would you believe, the president that saw the rise of ISIS after he broadcast to Iraq when our troops were going to leave? Are you kidding me? This woman, Frederica Wilson. Remember that name. Remember that awful, awful woman's name. Should never have been broadcast. Why would you politicize a phone call? What would be your reaction? You're sitting on a phone call, even if you heard something that you thought was insensitive by the president. Why would you get in touch with the media on that? Why would you, as a congresswoman, other than being a pure politico, as a congresswoman, why would you contact the media? I just honestly, wow. Of all the things that Democrats could politicize. And I don't know, maybe she's trying to take the helm from Maxine Waters. Have you heard anything from Maxine Waters lately? You know, this president has been in power for 9 months. He's gotten nothing from Democrats other than the threat of impeachment for nothing. He has effectively, with our allies, defeated ISIS, 90%+ of Raqqa overtaken, 80,000 ISIS fighters dead. We've seen the economy roar back in the second quarter, 3% growth rate. It averaged in the Obama administration 1.8% over 8 years. This president has been in power through three hurricanes, horrific shooting in Las Vegas, fires in California. I think he's doing a pretty good job. Stock market above 23,000 today. Businesses are coming back to the United States. He's talking about tax cuts now. I don't know. So during the Obama administration, before the Obama administration approved a deal in 2010, giving Moscow control of a large swath of American uranium, 20% of our uranium reserves, the FBI had gathered substantial evidence that the Russian nuclear industry and their officials were engaged in bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and money laundering designed to grow Vladimir Putin's atomic energy business inside the U.S. This is sickening. And the thing that bothers me the most is this. The Clintons won't go to jail for it. They should go to jail for it. Federal agents used a confidential U.S. witness working inside the Russian nuclear industry to gather extensive financial records, make secret recordings, and intercept emails as early as 2009 that showed Moscow had compromised an American uranium trucking firm with bribes and kickbacks in violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, according to the FBI and court documents. They also obtained an eyewitness account backed by documents indicating Russian nuclear officials had routed millions of dollars to the U.S. designed to benefit former President Bill Clinton's charitable foundation during the time of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was in office. And she served on the government body that provided a favorable decision to Moscow. And that body also included the President of the United States. The racketeering scheme was conducted with the consent of higher-level officials in Russia who shared the proceeds from the kickbacks, according to one agent in an affidavit. Rather than bringing immediate charges in 2010, however, the Department of Justice continued investigating the matter nearly four more years, essentially leaving the American public and Congress in the dark about Russian nuclear corruption on U.S. soil during a period when the Obama administration made two major decisions benefiting Putin's commercial nuclear ambitions. Bought and sold. Could you imagine if Hillary Clinton were the president of the United States? It would be the most crooked regime in the history of Washington, D.C. Everything would have been for sale. Immediately after the election, the Clinton Foundation closed. The Clinton Global Initiative, still around, not getting any money whatsoever because there's no quid pro quo. There's no quid pro quo. The FBI sat on evidence. Buried evidence tying the Clinton Foundation to a Russian bribery scheme as the Obama administration decided whether or not to give Moscow control over U.S. uranium reserves, and they did it. Clinton said there was no reason at the time in 2010 to oppose the Uranium One deal, argued the committee she served on had no veto power to stop the deal. He only gave the president a recommendation, which is do it, because they just gave us $145 million in our foundation. The Hill found documents showing investigators gathered substantial evidence well before the committee's decision that Vadim Makarin, the main Russian overseeing Putin's nuclear expansion in the United States, was engaged in wrongdoing as early as 2009. The Russians were compromising American contractors in the nuclear industry with kickbacks and extortion threats, all of which raised legitimate national security concerns, yet no investigation was done. Rosatom began its Uranium One takeover in 2009, and U.S. officials approved the Uranium One takeover in October 2010. The takeover gave Russia control over 20%, as I said, of our reserves. Oh, and by the way, Uranium One's chairman donated $2.35 million to the Clinton Foundation. Bill Clinton also got $500,000 for a speech he gave in Moscow shortly after Rosatom announced its plans to take control of this mining company in Canada. Thick as thieves. Thick as thieves. And this isn't circumstantial. And more is going to be coming out. The Senate Judiciary is going to open a probe into this. Chuck Grassley is the committee chairman. And he says that it has recently come to the committee's attention that employees of Rosatom were involved in a criminal enterprise involving a conspiracy to commit extortion and money laundering at the time of the transaction. The fact that Rosatom subsidiaries in the U.S. were under criminal investigation as a result of a U.S. intelligence operation apparently around the time that this committee that Hillary Clinton was on approved the Uranium Run One transaction raises questions about whether that information factored into the decision. Bribes and kickbacks. Bribes and kickbacks. So the latest athlete to protest the national anthem or just protest whatsoever, I don't know, is LeBron James. LeBron James has, you know, a $100 million contract. Shoes that he has got his name on or, you know, sell for $400 or $500. Maybe, man, I don't even know. I don't buy those shoes. I don't buy those shoes. LeBron James has been a critic of the president since the beginning. Not a big surprise. You know, there is a narrative being painted by African-American leaders about Donald Trump that is untrue. And a lot of dopes like this idiot believe it. The Cavs linked arms during the national anthem before the season opener versus the Celtics, I guess. And he wore a pair of shoes that said equality on them. Okay, great. What does that mean, LeBron? What does equality mean? Who's equal? Who's equality? What? Equality, what is that supposed to mean? Does it mean that you should distribute your money to inner city youth so they can be equal? Is that it? What sort of a vague protest is that equality, the word equality? Okay, yeah, equality's good. You got it there, LeBron. Now go out and slam dunk the basketball. Here he is talking with reporters about his activism, I guess.
What's up with y'all people?
Oh, no, this is just a Facebook Live video.
Giving y'all a little bit more in-depth insight about my tweet from earlier. You know, I think it's basically at a point where I'm kind of, you know, just a little frustrated, man.
I would be too, man. I mean, you're only making, like, what, $35 million a year? You got to go play basketball for a living and then talk to reporters and, meet adoring fans, probably sleep with a lot of groupies, go back to one of your mansions. I mean,
because this guy that we've put in charge has tried to divide us once again.
Now, if you look at the country as divided as it is, that started during the Obama administration. That's when we heard the rise of, white privilege. The president before Barack Obama divided us along lines of race and sex and socioeconomic status. So how is this president dividing us other than you don't like him? And some people do. So, yeah, you are not a person who likes him. So, yeah, we're divided.
And obviously, we all know what happened with Charlottesville.
And did the president have anything to do with that, you dope?
And the divide that caused. And now it's even hitting more home for me now, even more, because he's now using sports as the platform to try to divide us.
No, he's not. He's taking a side. The country's already divided on it, and I believe the split is 80-20 in favor of standing for the anthem.
And we all know how much sports brings us together, how much passion it has, how much we love and care, and, you know, the friendships and everything that it creates. And for him to try to use this platform to divide us even more, it's not something I can stand for, and it's not something I can be quiet about.
Right.
You know, you just, right. You look at him.
I'm trying to see if you'll have like a word that's over two syllables. Just listen real careful.
Asking, you know.
Really carefully, I should say.
NFL owners to get rid of players off the field because they're, you know, exercising their rights.
They don't have the right to do it. LeBron, I noticed you didn't kneel or sit during the anthem. So wait, aren't they taking away your rights there, buddy?
And that's not right. And then, you know, when I wake up, I see that, you know, a colleague of mine.
Still no three-syllable words.
Has been uninvited of something that he said he didn't even want to go to in the first place, you know, to the White House.
Yeah, and he struck the first blow. He said he wasn't going to go, and the president said, fine, you're not invited.
You know, that's just something I can't stand for, man. And we got, you know, Jamil Hill and Colin Kaepernick and, you know, all these people.
Yeah, Jamil Hill called the president a white supremacist, which is a lie, and then told people to boycott, essentially boycott ESPN, where she works.
People are speaking up, and, you know, it's for the great of cause. It's for
the great of
it's
cause.
For us to all come
the great of cause
together. It's not about a division. It's not about dividing. We, as American people, need to actually just come together even more stronger, man, because
come together.
This is a very critical time, and me being in a position I am, I had to voice this to y'all, so... love y'all, man.
Yeah, equality. Equality on your shoes there, buddy. President spoke in front of a group of folks yesterday. I believe it was the Heritage Foundation. Talking about, I just thought it was kind of an interesting comment about preserving our history and not tearing it down.
We believe we should preserve our history, not tear it down. Now they're even trying to destroy statues of Christopher Columbus.
There he goes. He's dividing us again. LeBron, come on.
What's next? Has to be stopped. It's heritage. We believe that America is a nation of opportunity because we are a nation of laws, and we support the incredible men and women of law enforcement. We believe that our great American flag,
despite the fact that they go out and wholesale kill black people,
should be treated with reverence and respect, and that young Americans should be taught to love our country, honor our anthem, and proudly recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
There you go. Dividing us again. Dividing us again. Oh, yeah. Boy, what terrible things he's saying there. You'll notice the economy is booming. We have a growth rate of 3.0%, which is twice as much as Barack Obama ever experienced during the 8 years of his administration. We talked a little bit yesterday to the Heritage Foundation about what he's doing for Obama-era regulations.
We have taken action to repeal the EPA's so-called Clean Power Plan, and we have ended, finally, the war on clean, beautiful coal. People going back to work. They're going back to work. Over the last 9 months, we have removed job-killing regulations at a record pace. In fact, in 9 months, we have done more, they say, than any president in history. And we're 9 months, and there's more to come. We have statutory guidelines. We have to go by a period of time. But but there's much more to come. And I believe in regulation, but it has to be limited to what we need. We want clean water. We want clean air.
Really?
It has to be fair. We also want, by the way, jobs.
That's crazy. Did you hear what he just said? I thought conservatives didn't want clean water and clean air. Right? And wasn't that when we, you know, that coded speech we have, the dog whistle things that we say when we want to get rid of regulations, it means we want people to have dirty water and dirty air. That's what I thought anyway. President Trump was speaking in front of the Prime Minister of Greece and the President were in the Rose Garden yesterday. And apparently during the election, the Prime Minister called Donald Trump evil. He was asked about that yesterday.
Mr. Prime Minister, with respect to the president, in March of 2016, you said of the potential for a Donald Trump presidency, quote, "I hope we will not face this evil." And I'm wondering if after spending time with the president, you have changed your mind or if you're of the same mind.
I wish I knew that before my speech.
That's how Donald Trump responded. And of course, the prime minister ate some crow. And some souvlaki. I believe a little souvlaki with the crow is quite delicious. You know, there's a pretty cool story. Did you see the viral video of the roofers in Maine? They were on the roof there working, and nearby high school football game started, and they were doing the national anthem. And these guys stood there with their hands on their hearts, took their hats off, and there's a photo of them, and it's gone massively viral. Well, they spoke to him yesterday. Here's what they had to say about the national anthem. And I think we could all learn something from these guys. These guys who don't make $100 million a year. These guys who don't who aren't pampered and have trainers and have massage therapists. And for a living, play a game and retire at 34 years old with a massive salary. Gigantic endorsements. No, just some guys who go up on a roof, carry bags of shingles, and nail them to a roof. Sweat their asses off, sunburn themselves, make probably a little bit more than minimum wage. Here's what they have to say about the national anthem. LeBron.
Waterville and Old Town, we're getting ready to have a high school football game.
We heard it come on, so we just
stopped what we were doing.
And put our hands over our chests. Them guys get paid a lot of money to do what they do. That has nothing to do with me. That's the way I was brought up, to stand for the national anthem and respect it. A lot of positives, some negatives, but there's always negatives with the positives. So haters are going to be haters.
That's what I was taught to do.
I watch football. I understand why it's taking off. It's just something that people should do. For me, it was more or less my uncle Walter was in the military. Every time I hear the national anthem, I want to put my hand on my heart. It's what I've done since I was a kid.
We respect the flag. That's what we do.
We'd do it all again, and it wouldn't matter if someone was taking a picture or not.
You know, there was nothing wrong with it. There was nothing wrong with standing and looking at the flag and tearing up when you hear the national anthem, and when that last line, "Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave," and the military flyover happens, and you're torn between, tearing up and just overwhelming joy. There was nothing wrong with it. There was nothing wrong with it. You have nothing to feel ashamed of when you do it. There was nothing wrong with it. I make my kids stand. We have guests over. We have guests over. And even my leftist friends in the Washington, D.C. area where I lived for a decade, we would all stop when the national anthem was playing, when we were watching a game on television. We'd always pay attention. No, you pay attention. I don't care who you are. You stop eating, you stop doing whatever, and you focus on that flag. Yesterday, Marie Harf used to work with the Obama administration. She worked as a Department of State spokesperson. She's got a TV gig now. Now that Raqqa has been essentially taken, she's trying to give the Trump the Obama administration credit for it. Here she is.
Well, I think it took the whole world by surprise how quickly ISIS was able to take territory in Iraq and in Syria back when they first really rose to prominence. But after our administration sort of got a better sense of what was going on, we did put in place a plan that we see being carried out now? I mean, the plan to retake Raqqa was put in place during the Obama administration.
No.
Now, President Trump has done some things like loosen some of the rules of engagement. He has made some tweaks around the edges. But this is a plan that the military has had in place for a long time. And Ed is absolutely right. This is a big victory.
Yeah, it is a big victory. And if it had just been the Obama administration, ISIS would still be in control. And they might be making incremental success, but ISIS would still be in control. And the American soldiers would still have their hands tied. And they would still have to get approval from Washington to drop a bomb. Yeah. Marie, you know, you're cute. I mean, really are. And pretty smart. But no. Joe Scarborough yesterday. I don't know. Joe Scarborough. First of all, I don't know. I don't necessarily like to talk about him because it promotes a show that nobody watches. He and Mika Brzezinski, who are, you know, banging each other. Yesterday, he talked about Donald Trump, and he said he's the antithesis of Jesus Christ. Everybody's the antithesis of Jesus Christ. I mean, really? Are we all, do we truly reflect Jesus Christ? We look in the mirror, do we see Jesus Christ? No. We're all the antithesis of Jesus Christ. Here he is.
We are so drowned in information that you just, some things cannot be debated. And you look in Matthew and go through the Beatitudes, every single Beatitude. You go through Jesus's teaching, what he says he wants in people to be. Donald Trump is the antithesis of just about every single thing that Jesus Christ said on the Sermon on the Mount. Go read it. None of us are perfect, but he goes out of his way, it seems, to thumb his nose at all conventions, including the basics of the Beatitudes.
Whatever. Would Jesus bang the snot out of his co-host on television and then destroy two marriages? I'm just saying. I'd say that's pretty antithetical. You know. More people in Hollywood are talking about what happened with them with regard to not only Harvey Weinstein, but just the entire industry. They're just the worst people in the world. Donna Karan said she's apologetic from the bottom of her heart and embarrassed about stupid remarks that she made last week, suggesting that sexual harassment victims were asking for it by the way they dressed. Considering she's a fashion designer, you know, you dress them that way. So basically, you are dressing women. You are designing clothes knowing that they're going to be sexually harassed, molested, and even raped. Right? I mean, really? That's what she's saying? She spoke with Women's Wear Daily, and she says, how do we display ourselves and how do we present ourselves as women? What are we asking? Are we asking for it, you know, by presenting all the sensuality and all the sexuality? It's not Harvey Weinstein. That's what she said originally. You look at everything all over the world today, you know, and how women are dressing, and you know, what they're asking by just presenting themselves the way they do. What are they asking for? Trouble. She told the Women's Wear Daily, said, I made a horrible mistake. I regret it from the bottom of my heart. This is never who I am as a woman. Well, apparently it was. It was who you were last week. It's what you believed last week. Her company's stock price has dropped pretty quickly, pretty precipitously. So she's sorry for what she said because of what it did to her company. Reese Witherspoon says she was sexually assaulted by a director. Here she is talking about it.
I have my own experiences that have come back to me very vividly, and I found it really hard to sleep, hard to think, hard to communicate. A lot of the feelings I've been having about anxiety, about being honest, the guilt for not speaking up earlier or taking action, true disgust at the director who assaulted me when I was 16 years old, and anger that I felt at the agents and the producer.
You know, it's great this is coming out. It's great this is coming out. The women who went through this they stayed quiet because they didn't want to have their careers ruined, and there's shame associated with it, you know? That's why they didn't do it. Why did the men stay quiet about it? Why did the women who weren't sexually assaulted, why didn't Donna Karen say anything about it? Why didn't Hillary Clinton say anything about it? Because Hollywood knew as much as Washington, D.C. knew. Everybody knew. The women who were assaulted or molested or sexually harassed, they have an excuse. There's shame and fear and all of these things in an industry that is so wrapped up in narcissism and ego and desperation to be noticed. Ideal victims, right? Ideal victims. Quest for fame or wait tables, you know? Here's Jennifer Lawrence talking about it. I mentioned this yesterday. She said she was put in a nude lineup. Here's what she had to say.
When I was much younger and starting out, I was told by the producers of a film to lose 15 pounds in 2 weeks. Super easy. One girl before me had already been fired for not losing enough weight fast enough. And during this time, a female producer had me do a nude lineup with about 5 women who were much, much thinner than me. And we all stood side by side with only paste-ons covering our privates. After that degrading and humiliating lineup, the female producer told me I should use the naked photos of myself as inspiration for my diet.
Wow. who does that? I mean, really, what other job? what other job do you have to do this? Oh, man. That's just, wow. Molly Ringwald got her break in Hollywood in the 80s when I was in high school, college. Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club of all, you know. Talk about my generation. She wrote her about her experiences with sexual harassment in Hollywood at a younger age in a New Yorker article called All the Other Harveys. Jeffrey Katzenberg, big producer, addressed an explicit comment he was quoted as saying in a 1995 Movie Line article. The head of a major studio and eventually someone who claims himself to be horrified by the Harvey allegations was quoted as saying, and this is back in 1995, "I wouldn't know Molly Ringwald if she sat on my face." Maybe he was misquoted. If he ever sent a note of apology, it must have got lost in the mail. He wrote The Hollywood Reporter and issued an apology for that. She also went on to say that when she was 13, a 50-year-old crew member told he would teach me to dance. Then he proceeded to push against me and he had an erection. 13 years old. When I was 14, a married film director stuck his tongue in my mouth on set. At the time, I was trying to figure out what it meant to become a sexually viable young woman. At every turn, some older guy tried to help me speed up the process. And all this went on despite my having very protective parents who did their best to shield me. I shudder to think of what would have happened had I not had them. Ringwald's connection to Weinstein was fleeting, saying she was warned about the producer, but had never heard of him and had no reason to fear him. She said she was lucky she was never cajoled into a taxi or had to turn him down for a massage. Okay, sorry, I had a little cough there. Harvey Weinstein also sent gushing emails to Hillary Clinton. He'd say, you know, this is back in 2010. He sent her emails about giving her free movies and stuff. As time moves on, I realize I haven't seen you and Mrs. Clinton, Hillary, this is the president, I guess, in a long time, but I think of you both often. I don't know if the producers are still worthy in your world, but next time you're in New York City, I'd love to see you. He signed it, "Your bad friend, Harvey." Apparently very common of him to write her. Pardon me, I'm coughing and need a glass of water. Okay. The two people who were on the floor in the Mandalay Bay Casino, Stephen Shook and Jesus Campos. Jesus Campos was a security guard. He went up to check a door that was open. And then Stephen Shook came up And Jesus Campos told him, get down, and saved his life. Heard bullets whizzing past his face. They have been silent ever since the shooting. Yesterday, they appeared on Ellen. Here is Jesus Campos, his first statement since being shot at.
And at that time, I heard what I assumed it was drilling sounds. And I believe that they were in the area working somehow.
So you thought the drilling, they were gunshots, but you thought it was just drilling sounds.
At first, I think it was just drilling sounds.
Right. So then at what point did you get shot? What happens here?
As that door's closing and it's so heavy, it'll slam. I'm walking down this way, and I believe that's what caught the shooter's attention. As I was walking down, I heard rapid fire. And at first, I took cover. I felt the burning sensation. I went to go lift my pant leg up, and I saw the blood. That's when I called it in on my radio that shots have been fired. And I was going to say that I was hit, but I got all over my cell phone just to clear that radio traffic for they can coordinate the rest of the call.
Okay. So this is the reason why, I guess, law enforcement did not know he'd been shot when they arrived on scene. Did you know that? I was on KXNT in Vegas, and I had heard that they didn't know. They were surprised when they arrived on the scene, and I kind of wondered why. Here is the maintenance worker, Stephen Schruck.
I didn't think anything out of the ordinary at the time. I came from a higher floor and came down a different hallway, a service elevator, and I walked out, and I rounded the corner for the 100 hallway, and that's when I, you know, it was quiet at this time, and the doors are set back, as you can see in that, about a foot. And Jesus was towards the end of the hallway, but I didn't know at that time. I thought I saw someone pop out of the cubby. And I kept walking, and you know, once I got more than halfway is when I saw Jesus, and I started to hear shooting. And I thought, at the time I didn't know it was shooting, I thought it was a jackhammer. And you know, as an engineer, I'm like, we're not working up here this late at night. We wouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And it was, I believe, outside. It wasn't in the hallway yet. And that's when Jesus, he leaned out and he said, take cover, and yelled at me. And within milliseconds, if he didn't say that, I would have got hit.
Now, one of the things that I noticed about the interview that I thought was odd was that Schruck was rubbing Campos's back, like trying to console him. Campos wasn't struggling to talk, and he wasn't emotional. So a lot of people had noticed that and thought it was kind of weird. I don't know. All the comments that I saw when I dubbed the audio from the video this morning were suspicious about this. And Alex Jones has got a new theory, I think, out there, you know, but that's what he does. That's how he makes a living. I don't know. It was a pretty unemotional interview. Maybe it's just because they're young guys. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it just seemed like they really weren't emotionally. Maybe they haven't digested it yet. I don't know. But anyway, here's a little bit more from Jesus Campos and Ellen.
You would have been hit had he not told you.
Yeah, it wasn't even fully in cover, and they were passing behind my head, and I could
that
feel
truck there, I guess.
Pressure.
You could feel a pressure going past you just even being out of the way.
Yes.
And were guests coming out of the doorways?
There was a female that
that's Campos.
Came out, and I told her to go back inside. It wasn't safe.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after, that's when Steven was approaching, and I told him to stay back and get cover. And that's when more rounds were dispersed.
Okay. I don't know. I would like to think these guys are heroes. I think that they, by being there, they stopped the shooter sooner than he would have stopped otherwise. The fact that the shooter saw them in the hallway, he knew that the gig was up. And he knew he needed to finish what he did, and he did stop shooting about 10 minutes later. So, I don't know. So, apparently, Volusia County Sheriff's Office saying that you shouldn't dress as a clown. It could risk your life. Warning to evil clowns and anyone considering creepy clown activity. We will not be there to save you if your intended target defends him or himself or herself. and you may face other penalties as well. Now, the warning was issued after an 11-year-old boy, told deputies Monday that he was attacked in by a man dressed as a clown. The boy told Deputy Justin Lococo he was riding his bike, and as he approached Pine Ridge High School, a clown jumped from behind the light pole and bushes and tried to grab him. The boy used a metal selfie stick to whack the clown a couple times, he said. The clown was described as 5'9", about 230, wearing blue hair and a rainbow-painted face. The boy said the clown chased him and then tripped and scurried back into the bushes out of sight. Sheriff's deputies looking for two men, one wearing a clown mask and the other wearing what appears to be a werewolf mask, who robbed a 7-Eleven in Wesley Chapel, Florida, on the morning of April 13, 2017. The victim did not observe the clown with any weapons. He advised he rode his bicycle to school and notified a crossing guard about what had happened. So, but the sheriff's department saying, yeah, you know, you might want to tone it down because somebody might defend themselves. This whole clown thing, honestly, clowns. Who's really afraid of clowns? I mean, you know, we talk about the fear of clowns, and I don't know what it is, what it's officially called. We've been talking about the last few weeks. I think a lot of people just think it's maybe cool to fear clowns now, and so like, oh yeah, I'm terrified of clowns. Me too, I'm terrified of clowns, you know? All because of It. All because of the movie It. Yeah, it's all just a bunch of BS. Really hurt the clowning community, by the way. So a company was selling an Anne Frank costume for Halloween for $24.99, decided to pull the costume. An Anne Frank costume. Anyway, they decided, like I said, to pull it. $24.99. I saw it online, actually. I don't know which one it was. There were a lot of costume places online. Here's what I probably think. I think that these costumes are made in countries like China, and maybe there's a loss of context there. I don't know. But then to put it online and sell it, yeah, you know, kind of stupid. Finally today, and I do appreciate you joining me today. You know, childhood is not as fun as it used to be. I mean, there are some really cool things, don't get me wrong, about being a kid now. But a lot of childhood is spent like this, you know. A lot of childhood is spent being monitored by parents, not being able to stay out. There's a lot of fear out there for a variety of reasons, whether it be child molesters or, you know, abductors or whatever. Kids have to wear bike helmets everywhere. There are things that don't exist anymore to a large degree with kids. Skin knees. Remember skin knees? Remember sunburn? Remember staying out until dark? Not having a phone call to call mom and dad when you were riding your bike and it was fine? It was perfectly fine. You played war. You played cops and robbers on the playground. You played on metal monkey bars and there was no wood shavings or recycled sneaker rubber to cushion your fall. You know? Some of these things are good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the whole padding and the whole cushions and the wood chip, that's cool. That's pretty cool because I have scars. I have many scars from my childhood. But taking away things like Christmas, taking away things like Valentine's Day, taking away things like Halloween, which is not a religious holiday. Some people take it as a religious holiday, and it's not. It's beyond that now. It's just a chance for kids to dress up and get candy. That's what it is. Okay, it's technically a celebration of fall, the autumnal equinox, and that's what technically it was originally. I don't know, maybe the Druids had something to do with it, you know, whatever. But for kids, it's just a chance to dress up, have fun, and get candy. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't get candy often. I'm not making this. When I was a kid, you know, but candy to a kid is like money to an adult. It really is. I mean, candy's a glorious thing when you're a kid. It's magnificent. And it's not often you get it. At least that's the way it was when I was a kid. And you know, this is the time, this is their New Year's. This is their, you know, you imbibe on New Year's. They imbibe on Halloween. They go out and they get free candy, and all they got to do is dress up and look cool and be a superhero or be a, you know, a whatever, and go door to door and be mischievous and get candy. Well, that's not good enough. I believe this is in Massachusetts, a town called Walpole. They've decided to get rid of Halloween following another school's, I guess, example a couple of weeks ago. Here's the story from WBZ TV Boston.
I think it's a lot of political correctness.
The decorations are out. Halloween, 2 weeks away. But there's controversy at Boyden Elementary School in Walpole. The school will not be having its annual Halloween costume parade this year.
I think it's a shame because, you know, Halloween is the funnest day of the year next to Christmas for children.
Yes. In a message to parents, the school principal says the costume parade is out of our ordinary routine and can be difficult for many students. Also, the parade is not inclusive of all the students, and it is our goal each and every day to ensure all students' individual differences are respected.
We have grandkids going to Boyden School. Wonderful school. Halloween party should happen on Friday because all the kids are excited.
Put a costume on, parade down the street, let them have their little time.
Yeah.
You know, why do you have to turn it into something political?
Last month, a school in Needham canceled Halloween events. Yeah. Now it's happening in Walpole.
People are too concerned with political and over-political means today.
I think they should go ahead and do it. I don't understand what the reasoning is behind it or whatever, but... It should be done. It's just a Halloween thing. That's it.
This coming Friday, the school will have a Halloween party for students after school hours.
Listen to this.
But as far as Halloween itself goes, the school says that day will be called Black and Orange Spirit Day.
Black and Orange Spirit Day. Can they sanitize anything else? Oh, man. Unbelievable. Hey, guys, I want to thank you for watching today, and thank you for listening if you're listening to the show. It's a blessing to be here. For those of you listening, you on the TV, on Liberty One TV, can see tpublic.com/user/conservatives with two E's. That is my politically incorrect swag line. T-shirts, mugs, you can get it. You can get my designs put on anything. I'll show the listeners sometimes, or the viewers, sometimes war is the answer. This is one of them. It's kind of cool. Politically incorrect. Donald Trump as a Grateful Dead saying, make America grateful again. I've got your safe space right here with a safety pin on it. You can get that. They're just a whole bunch of really cool designs. 62 designs, I believe, is what we have now. There's one that has a snowflake. It says, my kid is not a snowflake, which I love. Democrats aren't saying this anymore. There's a sticker that says, Jan Brady says, Russia, Russia, Russia. You can get that on a sweatshirt, on a hoodie. Proud climate change denier with the planet Earth in the middle of it. Che Guevara with his iconic picture with the expression murderous commie douchebag, not a hero. And one of my personal favorites, veganism is an eating disorder. There you go. tpublic.com/user/conservatives. I would be eternally grateful if you would order something from that website. It would be wonderful. Also, thank you to libertyonetv.com, libertyonetv.com. If you're not a member, guys, will you sign up? This right now is commercial free. This is speech that a lot of the time is censored on Twitter and Facebook, taken off. I know that Ben Shapiro is banned from Twitter. So those are not free speech zones. Twitter and Facebook are not free speech zones because they're run by somebody else. This is a free speech zone. This is true freedom of expression, and I hope you've enjoyed how I've expressed myself today. If you would like to follow me on Facebook, it is at Rob Carson on Twitter. I should say Rob Carson Show on Twitter. It is Rob Carson. And you can download my podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and a host of other media by just looking up the Rob Carson Show podcast. Okay? Again, if you can, sign up for LibertyTV.com. God bless you. Check out the other hosts and have a glorious day. And we'll see you again next time.
Thanks for listening to The Rob Carson Show. Friend him on Facebook at Carson Show, on Twitter at Rob Carson, and on Instagram, I think Facebook and Twitter are enough for now. We'll see you soon.